should lead the way. It's a kind of act because I am certain he knows exactly where the whiskey is kept. Even though I know the way to Clay's office, I second-guess myself at a few corners in the hallway, but Luca pretends not to notice. When we enter the rich navy blue office space with the delicate wooden trimming around the recessed ceiling, I rush towards the glowing cabinet and cringe as I try the glass door, hoping it's unlocked. It is. I pour into a short glass, stopping at about halfway up the globe, but as I go to screw the cap back on the bottle of whiskey, Lucas says,
"And one for yourself, my girl."
I look at the carpet and notice the cream-coloured fibres entwined with slightly darker ones. The image of me on my knees as I tried to rip the miscoloured fibres out flashes behind my eyes. I clear my throat. Pouring myself a glass that matches his, I ignore the memory. I sit down on the sofa opposite him, setting his glass down on the table between us. And his silence is so powerful. I bet men and women spill all their secrets and show all their cards as he assesses the scene in effortless, pensive silence. I don't know what to ask because I don't know anything about him. All I know is that he is my blood and everyone hates him, and I can't help but feel... Were you ever... friends? He grabs the glass.
No.
He leans back and hangs his thick arm over the back of the leather sofa, rocking the amber liquid in his glass with his thumb and forefinger.
I despised him from the moment we met.
I swallow hard. Those words moving deep into my heart as though he were talking about me. I lift my chin to hide the vicarious hurt. Why did you despise him?
You are not your father.
I didn't say that...
Bad blood within the families isn't uncommon, but made men take an oath and we keep the peace. There is a lot of bad blood when it comes to your father and the people I care about. A lot of pain, deceit, a lot of disappointments. You.
He pauses, measuring me up, and my chest tightens under his scrutiny.
Your existence, my girl, is not part of those disappointments or that bad blood.
I exhale hard over the sentiment laced through that statement. Despite the fact I can't read him for the life of me, he clearly has a view of my very visceral thoughts. I'm as transparent as a glass castle. Behind that thin sheath, I'm testing my place within his family, dipping my toe in to see if he'll accept me. He nods at the whiskey I have clutched in my lap, and I smile, bringing it to my lips. The smoky scent that reminds me of Clay caresses my nostrils, then my mouth as I take a small sip. It is like drinking a bushfire that tore through vines of overly ripe fruits and berries. It is sweet and chaotic, delicate yet masculine. I hum around the flavors. I fucking love it. I'm a whiskey girl now.
You like whiskey? Good girl. Now, what do you want from this new world you find yourself in, Fawn? It is a part of who you are, so what part of it do you want to accept?
I swallow the woody fire and clear the scorched aftermath before saying, I just want to be with Clay, be what he needs, but he's... married. The word drops into my mind quietly, my mouth parting to say it aloud. He has a wife. And I like her. Which makes this whole arrangement even stranger. It would be easier to hate her. The rational parts of me know that she is just his business partner, that they don't share a bed, have never shown any sexual affection, just mutual respect. But a part of me wants to be greedy. A big part of me. I want all of him. A white dress. To walk down the aisle. To be his everything, like he is mine. Happily ever after for Fawn Harlow. Butcher.
Aurora will not give my son children.
Luca interrupts my thoughts, another contemplation that must have played out across my face. I slowly shake my head, saying, I don't think he wants children, Luca. He was only willing to care for me because...
I wouldn't be so sure of that. Neither did I until later in life, but I found myself with them before I was ready. My son is smarter than me. He doesn't do things in halves. If he's a father, well, he won't be like me. I made mistakes with them all. All my boys suffered, but with Clay. Clay was basically an orphan, like you, my girl.
You did give him family. His brothers. There's so much love between them.
They created that bond all by themselves. They could have been at each other's throats, but they weren't. I don't know who that bond is accounted to, but it sure as hell is not me.
You are too hard on yourself.
None of that. Don't soften the situation for my benefit, girl. Listen and understand.
He states, and I hold my breath along with my innate need to comfort him. In that way, he's just like Clay. He's discussing his mistakes, showing a sense of guilt, but that's only half of what he's saying. What he's really saying is, I fucked up. I want you to know that I fucked up and I'm accountable for it, but you may not make me feel better about it or console me. Are all men like this? I wouldn't know. If I'd had a dad or even an uncle, maybe I would have a point of reference. I think Luca and Clay would prefer me to stone them for their mistakes rather than forgive them. As though neither of them has a person to show them forgiveness, to allow them to wallow in their mistakes, to grieve them. He goes on.
The fact is, I saw Clay exactly 36 times from the day he was born until he turned 24. I loved another woman, and the pain of seeing her with your father was more than I could bear to witness. So I spent every damn moment I could away from the district, away from my family. I was a shitty, selfish father, and I did what I wanted. I boxed. I ran boxing gyms and the competitions for the family all over the world. That is where I lived my life. I did it because I refused to see her in his arms. So, I don't need my failings forgiven or softened, Fawn. I need the right woman in my son's lives, moving forward because I neglected to give them the right one at the beginning. So, are you prepared for the part you need to play?
He doesn't love his wife. He loved my dad's wife. My heart pounds in my throat. Is that why you hated him? Because you loved her?
I was right, too.
His gaze loses focus as he stares at the glass of whiskey rocking back and forth in his fingers. Then he says,
Madeline and I had a son together, and, damn it, I knew if he thought the boy was his, he would love him, so I stepped aside. And I proved to be the worst kind of father as it stood, but he knew, somehow, or someone told him. He tried to have the boy killed, my boy, with his mother's green eyes, Connor. Everything changed from there. The bad blood was rancid. There was no going back. Are you prepared for what that means for your father?
I take another sip of my whiskey, using the delicious liquid to bide me some time while I contemplate. My father tried to have a child killed simply because he was not his own blood. Who does that? A smile hits the corner of my lips at the memory of Clay swearing to care for my baby and me, asserting that the baby is his despite the blood father. My heart steadies. And I know I want to be the right woman for him because he chose me when no one else did. I'll choose him forever. What part do I need to play?
You're very young.
I'm not weak.
No.
He nods slowly, his blue eyes panning my resolute face as though he can measure my strength like he's the authority on the subject.
No, you're not. Chapter 4. Clay. My younger brother Xander lands a hit on the side of Eddie's jaw, a heavyweight champion twice his size, snapping his head to the side, splitting his lip open, and spraying the ringside table and the white dress shirts of the Cosa Nostra associates. They revel in it, but I despise watching my youngest brother bouncing between those ropes, receiving and delivering the violence. It shouldn't be him. He wasn't meant to be part of this corruption. He was meant to get out, be better. I bite down on the cigar in my mouth as the room booms and shakes with barks and calls, the youngest butcher brother invoking chants from the crowd. The Butcher! The origin of our last name, a name they used when my father lived in Sicily as Paul Lucchese, before he moved to Australia and recreated himself as Luca, the Butcher, Butcher. And now, his youngest and brightest breathes life back into that legendary boxing name. The Legend! The room echoes the term, provoking melancholy to settle inside me. I've watched my father fight on the television more often than I've had a meal with him. I've heard the chanting of The Legend more times than I've heard him greet me. It's a pity my brother wants the same life instead of using his massive brain to finally take the bar. I never wanted this for my baby brother, the gentlest of us, even as he spills crimson fluid to their chanting. Yet as I gaze across the arena, landing on the Irish as they bet with counterfeits and the tellers as they clean their money with the real prints from the public, a slow smile settles on my lips. It's an idealistic setting, a poetic one, even. When a butcher spills a pint of fresh blood in this space while the workings of our corrupt empire play out seamlessly. Boxing is a butcher space. We may have bought abattoirs under the ex-Dons, Jimmy Storm's regime, and use them to manage the family's dealing and rid us of waste. We may run diamonds across the borders for the family and control the fisheries and the meat industry. But boxing. I stare at my young brother once more. Boxing is a butcher's world. My world. And this is my new order. My father sits on the far side of the knotted blue ropes, his fists set in tight balls in front of him as he watches the match. His eyes cut lines around the ring, following the motion of Zan's jabs as though he holds a string to each thrust. Across his sharp features, the ghost of concern fights with pride. We can't keep the kid out of the ring. The world can't keep the ring out of a butcher's soul. So this will become the new place to meet my associates, on hallowed butcher ground. A physical change that shifts the men chosen by Jimmy. I need to create my own mark and ensure my own loyalties. This is the place. Beside my father, my other brothers watch Xander, and I note their expressions seem to mirror my thoughts. Pride in his abilities, reluctancy in the situation. I don't know them. Not really. I just know the legacy. Keep your distance. This is your legacy, your birthright. And I feel the detachment between us because I wasn't present, because I had a singular focus on the legacy. I forced our segregation, ignored them as children, accepted that a leader is by default alone, only dragged down by common needs and wants. So while Max played rugby and Bronson fixed his bikes, Xander followed them around, and I listened to the family heads, learned. A leader is always alone. It is achingly obvious, too. My brothers sit together at the east side of the ring, always loyal to one another. I weather the west side alone, circled by sharks, surrounded by the capos and the underbosses, hand-picked by my ex-Don, a man who betrayed us, who us butchers executed. So today, I show this pack of cruel, greedy fuckers a new order. I don't trust them, yet. They'll want to earn that from me soon. We won't be doing things the Jimmy Storm way. We'll be doing things the Butcher way. I'll be splintering teeth in this new world, where my last name carries with it utter loyalty, devotion, even. Your brother fights like Luca, Joe says, drawing me from my thoughts, his gravelly voice melodic with his old-world Sicilian accent. Had I not known, I would have assumed he was a new immigrant to Australia. But he is one of the oldest underbosses in the district, one of the most devout to Jimmy Storm, even in memory. One I need to crack open and bleed the loyalty from. He does, I agree, my mouth patting the thin port cigar dangling from my lips. I look on at the match but listen to the man beside me, as his sighs expel in rough displeasure. Your father always was more comfortable in the ring than in a suit. It should have stayed that way, he says with a derisive scoff. He left the family all those years ago, spat on his legacy and left Sicily, changed his name, a name rooted in family honor, and still they loved him. And now, the son of a boxer, he's the don in the district. A history lesson, Joe. He folds his arms over his chest, still watching the match as I do. What do you want, Clay? I've been keeping up my end of the deals made with Jimmy, like I agreed to. What is this really about? Loyalty. Devotion. I inhale the cigar and answer around the exhale, my words rolling along the smoky ribbons. A history lesson. A lesson in loyalty. In your loyalty to the family. Your loyalty to LCU's ancestry. The bloodline that runs through this boxer's son's veins. As the words leave my mouth, Xander receives a bolo punch that throws him off his pace, allowing his opponent to land a cross jab on the right side of my brother's jaw. The impact hushes the crowd. The sound of Xander's grunt instinctively brings me to my feet. With my eyes glued to the match, I watch my sweet brother take a second jab to the eye, the first having clearly rattled his vision, the follow-up throwing him into the far rope. My father and brothers have also risen to their feet, large, ominous shadows backing Xander. All butchers on their feet. Joe's voice wraps around my spine as he says, Let's talk about loyalty. He is standing beside me now, and I turn my chin towards the snake to listen to every word without breaking my arrowed watch on Xander. Your father took an oath, but left the family. LCU had to hunt him down when he should have left the man in the ring where he belonged, not make him a boss. No refinement in him. That was apparent when he fucked another made man's wife. His words boil my temper between my ears. I pinch the cigar and throw it to the floor, grinding it into the cement with my heel. Xander hops from foot to foot, but he's behind pace, careless, receiving another cross to the same gash below his eye socket. I hiss at the contact. Your father, Joe continues. The family favorite drove a divide between our association in Australia. But Jimmy kept him under his protection because of you. Because of your brothers, because he lacked his own male soldiers, his own heirs. Jolted backwards, Xander hits the rope, bouncing on it for a moment of careless reprieve, until Eddie meets him in his recovering position, jabbing his face in brutal succession. My father barks orders at his son from his flank. The crowd is a calamity of boos, cheers, and vicarious groans. Grow up, boy! Joe sneers at me, and I ball my fists in tight, volatility creeping along my shoulders like a beast wrestling with my muscles that twitch to jump the rope and teach Eddie a lesson of my own, using the lump of meat to splatter blood all over Joe's face. Do you think we wanted to work for a boxer? And now you think we are all going to call you boss. I hiss as Xan finds the strength to cut a jab to Eddie's ribs, the snap of bone almost audible through the detonating spectators. Joe finally looks at me, and I at him. What? Boss. I ground, while in my peripherals, Xander ducks and then pushes up, driving an uppercut into Eddie's mandible, the lights dimming from his opponent's eyes on impact. The crowd explodes. Butcher! My last name, the name of a boxer, rumbles through the gym as I smoothly say, "If you ever address me as a boy again, you will find parts of your children stuffed inside the cow I gift you for your Sunday roasts." Butcher! The Butcher! I continue. "I'm so glad we had this conversation, Joe. I've been meaning to ask you where the fuck Dustin Nerick is hiding. And now I'm certain you have an answer." Joe's face is bright red with rage as he huffs like the 60-year-old man he is and snatches his jacket from the back of his chair. "You want a war, Butcher?" He stares up at me for a moment and I smile. "You've got it," he growls. He thunders away, shouldering his passage through the disorderly audience that is now on its feet, the chanting like tangible waves of intimidation my associate seems desperate to escape. "Butcher! The legend!" I watch him leave. Turning back, now alone, I tower over the arena. My space. I gaze past the ring at my brothers as they pat each other on the back, celebrating Xander's win. And at my father, who accepts Bronson's commentary and understands Max's nod of approval. I now stare at the Irish, the Capos, the Sharks. Perhaps devotion and utter loyalty are unrealistic expectations at this early stage in my reign. In the meantime, I will, of course, settle for fear. Chapter 5. Clay.
"She's been in the bathroom for over an hour,"
Bolton calls after me, hesitation and uncertainty tightening his vocal cords. Not unlike my palms will be to his jugular should she be in any discomfort. When I push the bathroom door open, the steam blankets me, curling around my body as I stride over to where she sits, a tiny figure amidst thick, humid air. She's huddled on the tiles, her knees held to her chest by her slender arms. The faucet is pivoted to the wall, creating a stream down the white porcelain tiles, a mild spray misting the air. I wonder for a moment how she reached the head in order to twist it. Quickly noting the small step in the corner, I frown at the image of her carelessly bracing herself on top of it. I walk straight into the shower when I hear her little sigh. My heart shatters at the vision of her so tiny. The need to wrap my body around hers, to visually give her mass, muscles that shield her, is consuming. She stares ahead, lost in the white marble until I slide down beside her. Scooping her up, I position her between my outstretched legs. She rests her head on my dress shirt, which is slowly absorbing the spray of water from the faucet above. When I tilt her chin, two big apologetic eyes lock on me.
"I'm not sad. I just sat down and it was nice."
Lies. "We don't lie to one another, sweet girl." I push the wet blonde strands from her pinkening cheek. "It'll get better." Light streams of water trail down her face, a coat of mist collecting on her, settling in tiny beads. "I'm not a soft man. I won't always say or do the right things. You're a young woman. And you need a mother, or a sister, but all you have is me. Forgive me if I don't comfort you the way you need." She sighs, batting her blonde lashes, opaque watery orbs collected between the bristles bursting on her skin with each slow flutter.
"This works, sir."
She rolls her head on my shirt, nudging me gently.
"You're all I need."
"Look at me," I order, bringing my hands up to cup both of her wet cheeks. She lifts her head obediently, and then crawls around my lap until she straddles my thighs. Her body is completely exposed, open. Pert breasts, sloping perfection to her delicate ribcage, her nipples, bullets that twitch my cock. A nervous habit kicks in, Absent-mindedly, her fingers make work of her wet hair, twirling thick, wet ringlets around each digit. She peers up at me and her eyes hold my breath in my throat, brilliant green and silvery blue, unparalleled in their beauty but also in such vivid pain. My forehead tightens. I want to see those enchanting orbs shine, bordered in crinkles of glee, clear from ghosts and memories, steady with pride and determination, with happiness, hope, love, for herself. I know you don't see what I see, little dear. She looks away, her lower lip vibrating as she tries to fight the pull of her emotions. I see the girl in the recording. The one who didn't fight for herself but traveled all over the city to fight for her brother, to find his killer. Her jaw wrestles with tremors within my cradling palms, and damn it, if I could trade my life to change hers, I would. Sweet girl, I say, encouraging her to look at me again with a gentle tilt of her face. She does. The girl in the footage is a survivor. Do I seem like the kind of man who loves easily? Her breath hitches at the word, love. I don't say it often, but I say it enough. Perhaps she needs to hear it more. I love you, little dear, and I will love you even when you won't, even when you can't. So you don't need to right now.
And you say you're not a soft man?
She says, her brows pulling with. A gaze filling with tears. You have the most enchanting eyes. I blame them.
You can talk.
She looks adoringly at me.
You are the single most beautiful person alive, sir.
I sigh roughly. She is damn blind. If only you looked in the mirror more. Now, sweet girl, give me a smile. She offers me a sad smile for my order, so I kiss it firmly, feeling her relax into the kiss. Her backside shifts along the taut muscles in my thighs, her pelvis making a rolling motion that stiffens my cock, allowing her bare pussy to grind along the fabric-covered bulge of my shaft. I eat at her mouth as she fumbles in her need for pleasure. I stifle the growl fraught within my throat as her little dance right now and the enduring discomfort from this morning has the man in me barking to sink into her, to fill my girl with cum, to fill her with. I shake the thought. My hands slide into her wet crown, fisting the strands tightly so I can tilt and kiss along her face, her jaw, her throat. The roll of her nervousness massages along my tongue when she swallows. She moans with her chin to the ceiling, her pussy grounding down on my shaft to its husky tempo, her mind disappearing again in the pleasure. I won't take her. Ah, damn it, I want to. I will not allow myself to take her until she forgives herself, until she sees what I see when I look at her. I won't allow her to hide behind my arousal, to love herself through my desire. My lips skate along her collarbone before I bite the ridge gently and then drag my tongue down. Sliding my hand to her back, my palms spanning out, I push her spine towards me. She bows beneath the pressure, her chest rising, her nipples meeting my eager mouth. I lick at the pebbled bullet, one of my favorite parts of her impeccable body. They are a contradiction to her classic, soft femininity. While her every curve is smooth and supple, her nipples scream she's made to be fucked like an animal. They engorge and flush with rich blood, lengthen and expand, creating a sinful little bullet that makes my cock leak. Her moans become throaty as I give my sweet girl the attention she needs, sucking, mouthing, licking the malleable, pulsing little tubes. Her hands move into my hair, and my body vibrates with the need to fuck her. So I need to do something I crave just as much as my own release, something I've become rather addicted to, and she deserves. She deserves her pleasure, all the pleasures I can give. A nipple pops from my mouth as I demand, "Stand up, sweet girl." I grip her hips and aid her as she climbs to her feet. I gaze at her pretty pussy, newly dusted in short blonde hairs that harden my cock to the point of pain. Put one of your knees on my shoulder and grind on my face like you do my thigh when I play with your tight body on my lap. A whimper escapes her, panning my fingertips up the back of her thighs until I get to the creases of her backside. I enjoy the way her skin prickles beneath my touch. I cover each cheek and lean into her while she lifts her knee and rests it on my shoulder. Her pussy becomes a slightly open slit. You have changed me. Very few things affect me, less change me. I push her into my mouth, and her hips don't shy away from grinding on my jaw and lips. Flicking my tongue out and tilting it up to the bundle of nerves above, I massage around her plump little clit. I hear her arms meet the tiles, hear a sigh leave her. Glancing up, I catch her rubbing her brow on her forearms. Her hair falls in a curtain around her face. I take a moment to appreciate the way her breasts hang full and purred, how her flat stomach tenses and her lips purse into a heart shape. Stunning. My sweet girl. I smirk against her, possessive and proud I'm the only man alive to have touched her. Alive. Those dead fuckers who touched her still haunt her. Mine. I drop my attention to her glistening little pussy. The scent of her sweet womanly flesh steadying my world. This pussy, I say, licking slowly and speaking into her warm, supple skin, lingers in my mind all day. I concentrate on her plump, pink clit, like her nipples. It's made to drive a man out of his goddamn mind. Not shy and elusive. No, not my sweet girl. Her little clit is fucking erect and hard, begging me to eat it. Her flavor is rich, salty, sugary, and feminine in every damn way. The spray of the shower has completely soaked my trousers, the fabric sticking to my thighs. I thrust up into the material, groaning as I eat her out, eager to get her juices on my tongue. She weeps in my mouth. Such a wet girl. Her hips meet the motion of my tongue, working her pelvis in circles to the meticulous rhythm. I thrust in deeper. Her sweet pussy clenches and clings, and it takes my entire focus to not grip her backside, flip her to her spine and stretch that rippling little cunt open around my cock until she can't breathe from being so full of me. Growling, I fist her ass cheeks as the tension spreads through my muscles, scorching a path around my limbs. It's hot and agitating, provoking me to act on that impulse. I flatten my tongue to her clit, work two fingers inside her pussy from behind, scoop them to hit the wall of her asshole, and knead the tissue hard. She cries out, her throaty moans rolling into groans and whimpers as she comes on my tongue.
Sir! Yes! Yes!
She acknowledges her screams belong to me, using her name for me in the throes of her pleasure. My good girl. I begin to kiss the swelling flesh, sucking all the feminine juices pooling around my fingers, lapping around them. I tease her sensitive skin, and she bucks and writhes as the last few shocks of sensation twitch through her. She drops, her knees hitting the tiles on either side of my body, her head seeking sanctuary in the curve of my neck. She pants against me. Let's get out of this shower, little dear. And from now on, I want you naked and warm in my bed when I get home. Now say, yes, sir. She lifts her head, her dual-colored eyes hazy from her orgasm.
Yes, sir.
I stand with her legs wrapped around my waist and walk her through the bathroom before setting her on her feet by the heater. I flick the vent fan on, feeling an intense sense of importance being her caretaker. I wrap a white Egyptian cotton towel around her narrow shoulders before beginning to undress myself. After pulling on a pair of jeans, fatigue hits me but my mind drifts to the range. I need to fuck or shoot. My cock is rock hard and my little dear can't keep her eyes off me, watching my crotch as I tuck her in.
Why?
She falters as I slide the silky sheets up her naked, sated body. Is it enough? What I'm offering her. She's a goddamn young girl who has crawled her way from one place to the next, never finding a sense of home, and damn it, I thought taking care of her was simple, routine, a sequence of necessities, warmth, pleasure, sweet food bursting from between her lips, a moist pussy. Those things I can do. Looking after her isn't like running a damn organization. I have no fucking clue what to do with this girl to stop the pain, to give her meaning each morning now that she is no longer striving to just survive. She watches me watch her eyes growing heavy. Her relaxed state plays out with the steady rise and fall of her breasts. I sigh roughly. I do know what her body needs, despite how little I manage her mind and temperament. As I brush the blonde hair from her cheek, my knuckles sweep it over her soft skin. A fan of pearly blonde hair creates wings around her. I need you to trust me, I whisper to her, scrolling my eyes over hers, watching as her beautiful blonde lashes bat slowly, peace and comfort at my affections weighing them down. I know what your body needs, little dear. I know when you need my tongue and lips buried between your legs, worshipping your sweet pussy until you shred the sheets by your hips. And I know when you need me to muffle your screams and bend you to take my drives like it's the last minutes of life. I know when you need a deep, steady fuck with my nose sliding on yours and our eyes locked. I know what your body needs. But you're still a teenage girl. I touch her temple, tapping lightly. I don't know what you need. I will fix this. I only need to understand your mind better. Numbers, I understand, logical explanations, patterns of behavior, if only there was a way. I frown. Reaching into the bedside table, I retrieve a finger prick blood test. Staring at it, I flip it over in my hand. It's been in here since she tried to drown herself a few weeks ago. And tonight, she sat in a shower for hours, staring at a wall. Eccentric, emotional behavior. I don't like it. I look at the sweet girl in my bed as she drops heavily into slumber, the ghosts of her past dissolving from her eyes with each slow, accepting bat of her long, dense, blonde lashes. I gently take her small hand in the large grip of mine and prick the tip of her index finger. Her eyes fly open. My good girl doesn't pull her hand from my grip, only glances down at the small bubble of crimson fluid pooling at the tiny puncture site. It's okay, sweet girl. I'm just testing your LH hormone. I put her finger between my lips, sucking the small bead of blood into my mouth, and then kiss the pinprick softly. A hint of concern washes over her, so I add, I need to know everything about you. I know nothing about the inner workings of a young girl's mind, and I want to understand your moods. Rather, I want to anticipate them.
I want...
She murmurs, unable to fight the pull of sleep, willing to trust me. Her eyes closed during a slow nod of acceptance.
A kitten.
Fuck me. A kitten. This is not the house for a kitten. It would be just as lost as my little deer in this cavernous estate. I imagine this request will elapse tomorrow. I breathe out hard as I watch over her, from her slender neck to the small divot between her collarbone. Her shoulders and arms, her hair thick and blonde like a Barbie doll. I clench my teeth, wincing through the pain in my chest. I rub at the ache, never having felt anything vaguely this intense or volatile. Like I could go from calm to feral in a second for her, and that's dangerously out of character. Just as lost as her. Darting my eyes to the implement fisted in my hand, 45 mL displays at me in blue on the viewing panel. According to the blood test taken during her stay in hospital a few weeks ago, that is well above what it was. She'll be ovulating soon. Perhaps now. Perhaps tomorrow. The baby. The cooking. The pillow stacks. It all gave her meaning. A reason to get up in the morning. Maybe a cat, then. I look back at her slumber-settled complexion, sliding my palm down until I'm pressing into the concave between her hip bones. My chest tightens. Empty. Christ. I rise to my feet. Walking from the room, I make sure to shut the door, holding the handle for a moment of hesitation. Leaving her again is utterly unnatural now, not unlike severing a limb. In my mind, for only a second, I quickly remove any flitter of sentiment that may be active across my face as I notice Bolton. He's stationed a few meters away. I nod at him, saying, "Whenever you don't have eyes on her, when she goes to our room or the bathroom, I want you to page me immediately, so I'm aware no one has eyes on her."
"No privacy for the girl then, boss?"
I glare at him. And he swallows, seemingly wishing the fucking question back down his throat.
"I mean..."
I stride down the hallway, and his explanation halts at my dismissal. He cares about her, so I let it slide. But he best not misplace his concern, his sense of responsibility, for some kind of rights to her. No one has a right to her. She is mine, in every damn sense. There isn't a fucker alive I need to share her with. Not a father or mother or sibling, and I'm insatiable with her, so this pleases me to no end. The halls are quiet, so when my phone rings from within my pocket, I scowl. The sound loud enough to have followed my trail back to our bedroom. Loud enough to wake her. I dig it out, noting the name John, and fisting it tightly, barking down the receiver.
"Butcher!"
My new soldier, recruited from the boxing gym. At the warehouse, answers frantically.
"The fucking warehouse was just broken into, boss. I tried to see the men, but there is still fucking smoke everywhere. They smashed the windows, came through the sides, but I couldn't see them. I shot at someone, think I hit them, but now the jacks are on their way here. I can hear the sirens. The road in is still black with smoke, so I can't see a damn thing coming."
Heat builds through my head.
"Who called the police?"
"Neighbours. The boatyard, maybe."
"I doubt it," I muse more to myself than to him.
"Are you alone?"
"Yeah, but all the guns, all the weapons are still here. They didn't take nothing. I've been trying to stash them."
"Don't stash them. The fire is still burning through the North National Forest, so light the entire warehouse up and get out of there. They'll presume the fire jumped."
He pauses.
"What?"
I rub my forehead, repeating myself.
"Check the area. Check no one is inside. Then light it up. I'll talk to the forensic fire marshal tomorrow. Just don't be seen leaving."
"The weapons!"
"Will be unsalvageable," I confirm.
"There is something else, boss. There is...
He falters and I have no tolerance for that right now.
"Spit it out!"
I command.
"They left you something."
I still, dropping my tone.
"What?"
"Photos, boss, of the girl. Lots of them."
He obviously wasn't prepared to have this conversation over the phone, as trampling his steady voice a burst of unease.
"Some are dated, boss, from today, from above, like from a drone or something. She's sitting by the pool with her legs in the water."
I'm not calm. The heat that scorches through this butcher's blood boils to the fast beat of my thunderous pulse. A blatant threat. Dustin. Or perhaps old Joe grew some butcher balls. Fucker. He continues.
"I'll take photos of him with my phone, send them to you, so..."
"No,"
I state. Outwardly staying still, controlling my breath, to not abandon the smallest twitch in case it's the catalyst for my temper. I need them in my hands. I need my girl's image in my hands. And he can't come here in case he's followed from the docks.
"Grab them all. Light it up. Get out of there before the police arrive.
Take the burnt off-road. The fire won't jump it. Go home. Q will meet you there and collect my possessions.
Yes, boss.
And John. I state his name with severity, smothering my voiceover. A warning of my own. Don't look too closely at those photos. They are not for you. He exhales hard.
Yes, boss.
Good boy. Chapter 6. Clay. Above and behind me, the only window in the boxing gym allows for a thin slice of rectangular light to permeate the otherwise neon-lit area, giving off a sinister glow. Even during the day, without lighting, it's near pitch black in here. Being a solid concrete walled construction, set below the ground, it's also uniquely soundproofed. Scream-proof. I tested such a theory an hour ago, when I watched a 120-kilogram heavyweight champion crush the life from the two morons who broke into my warehouse, but not before recovering the identity of the man calling the shots. Now awaiting my words are two capos and an underboss from the district's Cosa Nostra. Behind me in the ring, John shadow boxes, his hands high, his head constantly moving as he beats a phantom opponent. He's from a low-level gang with quick fists and an even quicker draw to compensate for his lack of Sicilian refinement. But I don't need another business partner. I have my brothers and father. I need unquestioning loyalty. Lucky Louie, the capo across from me, anxious in his boss's absence, moves his feet with a rightfully hesitant shuffle. His brown eyes dart from the men I have scattered around the gym to the bloodstain in the center of the training mat. We haven't managed to clean it yet, I mentioned to him, my voice steady and ripe with mocking indifference. He feigns a neutral gaze.
Should we wait for Joe?
He's here, I advise straight away, but give no further explanation, as I take a step towards Vincenzo, an elderly underboss near due for retirement, and his capo, Michael, who knows it.
Last night, two men broke into our warehouse, only to smash a few windows, and,
I omit the mention of my little dear,
called the police. Does anyone know anything about this?
Vincenzo puffs out disapprovingly.
This is the Irish. I knew they'd turn on us eventually.
He is a predictable bore. Every discussion with him quickly finds its way to curse the Irish, the Japanese, the bikers. We have treaties with them, however rocky at times, but he's an old Sicilian man set in his ways, but not ballsy enough to ever go against the hierarchy.
They wouldn't risk losing our agreements, boss. Where would they wash all that damn cash?
His capo, Michael, shakes his head in disagreement.
They are no better than thugs, young Mikey.
Vincenzo throws his shaky arms in the air, spitting out,
I never trusted them.
The arguing continues, intensifies, and I watch them throw the blame around like a grenade that may detonate in their unwitting fists.
That's enough,
I say, my voice not wavering, calm and direct. Silence descends at my smooth utterance. Nodding at John, I wordlessly signal for him to retrieve our guest from the rear change room. It takes a few moments for my family's gaze to drift to the man being dragged out for them to view. Joe is gagged and flailing around, but otherwise unharmed. I lock eyes with his capo, Louis, who starts to pant in anger and shock.
What the fuck is this, butcher?
Louis spits out, his face glowing red with fury.
What the fuck are you doing?
I smooth my hands down my tie, while John pushes Joe to his knees at my feet and removes his gag. Spittle flies around the space between us as he gasps for air.
You're out of control!
I kick him in the face, throwing him backwards to his spine. I provoke a grunt through his lips. He lays still. Hovering over him, I smoothly insist.
Boss, say it.
He glowers up at me, his dark eyes flaring in defiance.
Not on your life, boy!
Sighing tightly with displeasure, I grit my teeth on the word boy, wearing only bitter derision as my expression. Turning from him, I head towards the seating, hearing a scuffling and the calamity of voices as John drags Joe to his feet. Forcing him to follow me, John does as he was previously instructed. I speak as I prepare.
The two men who broke into my warehouse last night said you were responsible for the hit.
I drag the knot in my tie down my shirt and remove the silk, folding it and laying it over a seat.
What did you hope to achieve?
I kick my shoes off, listening to the sound of Joe arguing with John.
Did you want the police to find my stock?
Our stock, Joe. Your family's stock.
Are you not with us anymore?
I turn to face him. I don't often get my hands dirty. As the Don, I don't need to. Which is why this is further significant. I choose to. Choose to handle this like the son of a boxer. The fucking proud son of Luca Butcher. I walk to the ring, ducking between the boundary ropes, and step onto the mat. Silence thickens until I say to the men standing in wait,
"He is not with me. I understand that Jimmy allowed you to take a peacekeeping stance when it came to Dustin. It was a Butcher issue."
I chuckle contemptuously.
"I know you were allowed to maintain your relationship with him and his operations. I am not that generous. You must pick a side. Joe already has."
I bounce from foot to foot, the familiar texture of the padding filling me with both pride for the Butcher blood coursing through my veins and with rage that its rule was ever questioned. Boy.
"Don't forget to knuckle him,"
I remind John, rolling up the sleeves of my dress shirt to each elbow, revealing the ink lacing the muscles in each coiled forearm. The knuckles are to offer him a final favor, for this isn't a match. It's an execution.
"Yes, boss."
I stare at Joe, his eyes fixed on the brass now snug within the web of each of his fingers. The weight of that metal often washes over a man like artificial, borrowed power. I won't be knuckled. I plan on beating him the same way my father would, the same way my younger brother Bronson took down the man Joe fondly called boss for most of his life.
"Let's do this then, boy,"
he snarls, curling his lips and bracing both shiny fists before his face.
"Don't pretend this is just about Dustin. This is about the young pussy you are now playing with each night. Dustin's trashy daughter. Do all our associates know that you have her captive in your house?"
I let him talk. He glares at me over the glistening brass as he continues.
"You can kill me, boy, but this is bigger than you are. He will get the girl and the baby."
He thinks she's still pregnant.
"Dustin is the only man the blue collars will work for. The only man who the bikers will work for. Jimmy knew this. Dustin grew up with half of those thugs. He was the man in these parts well before Cosa Nostra ever landed in the district. They don't like Sicilians. You're never going to win. You really are just a dumb fucking son of a boxer. Boy!"
He's working with the bikers.
Damn it, Madonna mia. I know where to find Dustin.
Hiding in the stockyard motorcycle club compound out beyond Morup.
Fucker.
He is completely untouchable there, within their solid brick walls and barbed wire fencing. Protected from the press, from civilians, protected by petty outlaws. Dustin wants a damn bloodbath. It'll be the biggest gang war ever recorded in the district, and as the mayor, I'll be forced into appearing transparent when the streets bleed. I'll have to give the media some kind of propaganda, a kind of constructed truth, and still manage to hide my part, my family, my little dear. This is where, previously, I would have bid Luna control the leaks of information. But after breaking our relationship to be loyal to my little dear, well, I doubt she is eager to aid me. My only hope is that she has maintained a healthy and intimate relationship with my wife. Can I buy the bikers out? They are like fucking animals. The casualties will be immense. Dustin knows this too. Joe's impatient, his growl ripping me from my thoughts. They are all edgy the first time they are knuckled, eager to see what a thick piece of metal can do to the skull of a man. He thrusts forward towards my face, I duck to the side, and when his shiny brass fingers slice past my ear, I drive my bare fist into his nosebone. His head snaps backwards. Louis barks something from behind me while Joe's groans fill the empty boxing gym. The old man squeezes his eyes shut, trying to find purchase. I wait for him to regain his vision, and when he does, he roars, rushing me, so I jab him again, sending him backwards into the rope. He bounces on the bungee like a sack of meat, folding down the center. He's old. It's not a fair fight. But no less fair than slicing his throat open with a wire from the back seat of a car, or shooting him on the sidewalk, or slinging him up and cutting pieces from his bones. Life hasn't been fair. Dustin's trashy daughter. And he took pictures of my property, of the most beautiful fucking images of a sad girl who has been through too much. None of it is fair, but this life will be more than that to her from now on. The life I give her. My body creates a shadow over him, a creeping blanket that covers the light cast from overhead. I drop to my knees, hearing the word boy echoing in my mind. Hit me, I hiss at him, lowering my arms, unguarded and welcoming. Hit me, my friend. He lifts up with a throaty growl. Charged, he implants the brass below my right eye, opening my flesh. Blood pours down my face and into my mouth. I smile around the hot, thick fluid. Then I lay into him. It is an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, but Dustin's trashy daughter. I want all his fucking teeth. I slam my fist into his mouth, ramming several shards of white teeth down his throat, provoking him to raise his hands to protect his face. I break the bone in his forearm. Crack! Another hit to the mouth. I deliver punch after punch. The next one harder than the last, hearing his disrespectful tone talking about my father and thinking about the warehouse, the bullshit, the disloyalty. Fucker! His blood begins to spray my face as I slowly cave the bones into the soft tissue within, but I keep jabbing, even as the blood gushes from him like a fountain, as it drenches my shirt, my face. My knuckles shift around under the pressure, once broken and having never completely healed. I ignore it, and I keep jabbing even as he stops moving, as the silence hangs ominously between each time my fist deepens the cavity now in his skull. I keep jabbing. Then I stop, lean back on my heels, and pant. Still staring down at him, the unseeing glaze of death creeps across his wide eyes. Boy. I spit at him, the crimson fluid landing on the bludgeoned mass of his body. Much better. I regain my resolve through deep breaths. Slowly and calmly, I climb to my feet and turn to face the rest of my guests, knowing the sight of their colleagues' blood seeping into my clothes will churn their stomachs. I open my arms wide, smiling reassuringly, the metallic flavor of blood moving across my tongue as I speak. I will not punish anyone else for his mistakes. Walking to the bench, I collect a towel, casually wiping the red fluid from my face and hair. I speak as the white towel is slowly dyed red. Boxing is at the core of my family, at the core of the Cosa Nostra. I realized yesterday that not everyone has the same respect for the sport. You have never been in the ring, no? And so I insist you embrace it. Every Sunday,
I will welcome you all to my gym, where a member of your firm will be nominated to fight. I pick the opponent, and Vincenzo, training my gaze to his stern but respectful eyes, I make clear, the Irish will be here too.